For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.
And now it's time for this.
Techscape on Taking Stock. Brought to you by PwC. Our industry experts can help you unlock the full potential of AI to transform your business safely and responsibly. Visit pwc.ie to learn more.
You may have heard of the encrypted messaging app named Telegram in the past month, ever since Pavel Durov, the platform's founder, was captured by French police. But that what is less known about the app, perhaps, is the sheer volume of its elements and how many people actually use it, particularly in the criminal underworld. Drug dealers, white supremacists and even more insidious elements across the globe are using this in great, great numbers. Well, here to tell us more about the app and its origins is Chris Stokel-Walker, who's tech journalist, author, lecturer and programme favourite. Chris, thank you very much for coming back to Taking Stock.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Mandy.
Now, look, this has been in the news of late a lot, but I really wanted to start today with talking about who Pavel Durov is and how this whole platform started off.
Yeah, so Durov is an interesting character. Essentially, was one of the co-founders of a platform called VKontakte, now called VK, which was Russian's equivalent of Facebook. So he set it up with his brother years and years ago, basically at a time when Facebook was not in Russia because of various different reasons, including the fact that they kind of have a sort of quasi-parallel internet going on there where they prefer their homegrown alternatives. So VK becomes hugely popular, is the place that many people transact their business, interact with each other online, chat with each other and do all sorts of stuff, including fomenting revolution against the Kremlin, which is where Pavel Durov starts to get into trouble, Mandy, because around kind of anti-government protests against Vladimir Putin, a lot of those are being organized through VK, and the Russian government decides that this is not good. They ask Durov to hand over data of users who are basically planning their protests through VK. Durov refuses, and he becomes this, I suppose, cause célèbre for a sort of freedom and freedom of speech, freedom of information, and standing up against dictatorships. So he becomes hugely popular. Now, I'm conscious, Mandy, we haven't yet got into Telegram. So around this time, Durov and his brother decide that actually what they have with VK isn't quite strong enough, isn't quite good enough, doesn't quite suit what they want because it is still sort of semi-public. So instead they set up this messaging service, similar to WhatsApp, I suppose, is what many of us might think of it as, where you can interact with people one-on-one or in group chats. And again, it has that same basic principle of we will not hand over your data. Around this time also, Durov leaves Russia because things get a little bit too hot for him. So that's how we get to the point of Telegram, I suppose, launching, and also how we get to the point of Telegram becoming this kind of having this reputation, I suppose, of being a place where you can say what you want.
And so we want to look at the unique selling points of Telegram itself, looking at its unique features like the channels and the supergroups, because that's, I suppose, the thing that begins to set us apart. So when we're talking about numbers now, okay, in today's terms, what are we talking about in terms of how many people are using it and how many people are actually employed by this company when you're talking about the numbers that we begin to talk about?
Yeah, in terms of employees, we don't really know fully. This is one of the things. We understand, however, that it is much, much smaller than pretty much any other comparable tech platform that you can think of. Even if we compare it to, for instance, X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, even after Elon Musk decided to take over that platform and basically fire most of his staff, Telegram has, you can probably count them on not maybe one hand, not maybe two hands, but maybe if we got a room full of people and counted them on individual hands, you're not talking about many here. Probably, certainly, I would think less than 100. In terms of the user numbers, that is much more significant. And this is where Telegram is really interesting, because they're running a huge platform on what is essentially a shoestring budget when it comes to personnel. They have nearly a billion users. They got around about 950 million or so users at the midpoint of this year. And that is, you know, a really significant one. Many of them are concentrated in the Eastern European bloc, kind of Russia and elsewhere. But it does have a reach globally, and I think that is what makes it quite such an interesting case to examine.
Yeah, and who's using it? Like, what types of people? I mentioned in the intro there's lots of criminals and white supremacists and stuff. Who is using it, and why does this particular platform appeal to that kind of underworld, if you like?
Yeah, all of them and more, I think, is the thing. Yeah, there are several groups of people who exist on Telegram and sort of coexist and rub along against each other, either because they don't really interact with one another or just because they see it as really useful. So you have, in the most eye-catching way, the kind of criminals, both cyber criminals and offline criminals, who really like the idea that Telegram has had this very hardline view up until very, very recently of, if a government asks us for your data, we will do everything we can to not give them it, basically. Mm. And through that, and through lots of the other bits of functionality, including supergroups and multimedia messages that you talked about, and the encryption that you can turn on as well, it basically means that it's a useful haven for people to organize criminal enterprises. So you have that as one group. Then you have, I suppose, the kind of freedom of speech and anti-authoritarian sort of anti-surveillance campaigners who use Telegram because of much the same reason that the criminals do, which is Durov and Telegram have said they would not hand over user data if they were asked by a government. And increasingly, governments are asking for this stuff to try and tamp down revolutions before they begin. But that's not the whole story, to be honest. I yesterday was talking to a source of mine who is a really high-ranking world expert on protecting people from intimate partner violence and the way that that is done through technology. So essentially abusive partners either stalking, harassing, abusing their partners through the use of social media. And she was about to step on a plane to go back to New York. She happens also to be a friend of one of the friends of my partner.
That was an interesting segue. I was going to pick you up.
They're also popular on Telegram, potentially, Mandy. No. A friend of my partner's, she was about to step onto a plane. I know her relatively well. I was really keen to talk to her for a story that I was writing. And she and others in her social group use Telegram as their kind of main way of communication. And I think that's just because they're kind of from a techie, slightly nerdy background. This was the app that sort of group of people chose in the mid-2010s, and they've kind of stuck with it since then.
Mm. Yeah, and as you say, there's a great variety of people, different people using it at any one particular time. Quite interesting to see those figures, though. A very small staff, considering the amount of people that are actually using the platform. But let's move on to Durov and the arrest. Why and on what grounds was he arrested?
So he was arrested because essentially, and it's really important to clarify here, this is not him personally doing this stuff, but instead his platform enabling this stuff. The French authorities, because Durov is in part a French citizen, as well as we believe being a Russian citizen and a couple of other nationalities, he was alleged to have essentially allowed Telegram to become a haven for the distribution of images of child abuse. So French authorities were really worried about what we believe is a kind of child abuse image sharing ring that was using Telegram. Our understanding is that they had asked Telegram to take action before, and because Telegram has this very strident anti-government, no engagement approach to things, he eventually essentially ignored it. And so things like the French government just had enough and said, actually, you know what, we are going to haul you off a plane when you land near Paris. We're going to slap you with an arrest warrant, and we're going to put you in part of this investigation as we try and uncover more and more. So that's kind of the reason, I suppose, why this all came to a head around about a month ago. This was back in late August when all of this unfolded, and it really caused huge ramifications, I suppose, around the world.
Mm. And is this part of the EU new laws kicking in, and could his case and what's happened to him set a precedent for other big tax holders? Because as you say, it's not his personal activity, but he's now being held responsible by law for what's happening and ongoing on a platform that he created.
Yeah, so those two big tech laws that you kind of hinted at, Mandy, there, they are the Digital Markets Act and the Digital Services Act. One protects consumers from bad practice by companies using kind of their monopolistic tendencies. The other puts requirements on companies to behave properly when it comes to acts of law and things like that. Those two have become very important and very pertinent and frankly good weapons for regulators in Europe to use against these companies, particularly in the last year or so. When Durov's charges were read against him, there was not a mention of either of those in there. Now, that's not to say that they're not connected. I think that what is interesting, and you kind of touched on it there, is that the DSA and the DMA, the Digital Services Act and the Digital Markets Act, they do put a responsibility not just on the platforms, which can be slapped with relatively huge fines of 6%, 10%, depending on which one you look at necessarily, of their whole global revenue, but also actually there is an element in there of executives starting to be held responsible for the actions on their platforms. So it's that latter bit that I think French authorities were maybe looking at here when they decided to step in against Durov, and the idea that actually tech executives have been able to kind of claim 6 degrees of separation and a little bit of distance that from what their platform does, and actually not so much anymore.
Now, we've both been looking at a recent New York Times investigation into this, which particularly looked at the messages that were back and forth, in particular in relation to criminal activity and white supremacists. You had a look at this for us. Yeah. Well, what's your analysis of what they found out?
Yeah, it's incredible, really. There is this concept of actually thinking that this is a relatively mainstream platform, which it is. But as soon as you dig under a little bit of the surface, you start to see a really strong criminal underbelly. And that has real significant risks. So everything from kind of gun trading to terrorism to kind of white collar crime, as well as blue collar crime, the ability to purchase drugs and so on and so forth. The New York Times looked at kind of 1,500 channels that were operated by white supremacists. They looked at a couple of dozen channels that sold weapons. They looked at another couple of dozen channels that were essentially kind of drug marketplaces where you can tap in, log on and say, I want this. And it's delivered to your door from around about 20 countries around the world.
Mm. Chris, over the course of the last couple of years, you and I have been talking about various different ways in which communications are infiltrating into criminal activity and even war. What did you make of the recent situation in Beirut, where Israel attacked the targets through the mobile phone network, it was a paging network. But that idea that now governments are using communications tools, which are in our hands, as a tool of war.
Yeah, it is a really shocking, really kind of terrifying concept, I suppose. I mean, there are kind of two aspects to this. Number one is the communications thing, which we have always known that our communications are potentially being tapped. And that is one of the reasons why those terrorists turned to pagers, is because actually they thought that they were being tapped on their phones by the Israeli Defense Services. And they decided they would go for a slightly more analog alternative, and turns out to have really come back to bite them in many ways, with this kind of simultaneously terrible but also simultaneously kind of awe-inspiring attack in the way that they managed to get into the supply chain. I think that is the thing that also is worth highlighting, Mandy. And it doesn't come necessarily to this kind of telegram and communications and you know, eavesdropping element, but it does come in some ways to the risk that actually, you know, our worlds are increasingly interconnected. So I know we've had, you know, in recent days, the United States saying that they are going to try and outlaw China from getting involved in any kind of smart vehicles in the United States, because essentially what this attack with pagers showed is that if you are able to weasel your way into some sort of technology, you can essentially light a kill switch that can, you know, in some cases literally blow up in people's faces, but also in other ways could be used to, you know, immobilize a communications network or a network of vehicles. So, you know, that I think is giving people a lot of pause. This idea of, you know, our supply chains are very complicated. They can have things inserted into them. Sometimes that'll be physical bombs, sometimes that'll be the digital equivalent.
Well, look, it's just bringing to the fore the importance of data, communications and defence. And sometimes we tend to think of these things as the things of science fiction movies, but unfortunately they're becoming more and more real. But Chris Stokel-Walker, as ever, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for your insights into all of this. That was Chris Stokel-Walker, tech journalist, author and lecturer. This is News Talks Taking Stock. After the break, Keir Starmer, a £22 billion black hole, cast a dark shadow over proceedings at the Labour Party conference this week in Liverpool. We'll be hearing what went down after the break with Mark Paul of the Irish Times.
For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.